Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of September 2018. It's USDA Report Day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the site of the Big Iron Farm Show in West Fargo, North Dakota today. We'll talk about those numbers as released from the United States Department of Agriculture with Jackie Vakes, Stuart Peterson, and then a bit later in the program, Jerry Golke will join us. He's on site here in Fargo at the show, and I caught up with him to discuss some of the problems he's having on the farm in eastern North Dakota with soybeans, and a similar problem that he's got in the Rockford area in northern Illinois. You'll want to stick with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished lower after the USDA report this morning. September corn down 13 and three quarters at $3.41 and a half. December 3.52 and a half, 14 and a quarter lower. The March down 13 and a half at 3.65, and the May at 3.73 and a half down 13. And December of next year at $3.89 down 8 cents. Like the corn, the soybeans finished with a higher yield. September contract in the beans, however, rallied 8 3/4 cents on that news at 8.29, November at 8.40, up 8 1/4, and January at 8.53 and a half, 8 cents higher. March futures up 7 3/4 at 8.66, and the May at 8.78, 8 higher. November beans at 8.96 and a quarter, up 10 1/2 cents. The bean oil down a dime at 27.63, bean meal at 3.15.70, $1.50 higher for the day. September wheat futures at 4.81 3/4, down 12 cents. The July at 5.45 for the soft red, down 7 1/2, and hard red July finished 11 lower at 5.46 1/2. Live cattle futures in Chicago in the October at $111.47 1/2, up $2.17 1/2. The feeders finished the September's up 2 1/2 cents, or rather up $2.50 at $154.62 1/2, and October up 2.57 1/2 at $155.2 1/2, and lean hogs for the day in the October at $55.80. $1.32 1/2 cents higher. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up, listen to us on demand, live anytime you'd like as well at willag.org. Here's some of the other markets. Crude oil for the day at $70.36 a barrel, $1.11 higher. Ethanol futures down 2 6/10 cents at $1.26 7/10 cents per gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel just about unchanged. They're trading at $2.25 6/10 cents. And gasoline on the RBOB at $2.03 3/10 a penny and 9 cents higher. Natural gas for the day at $2.83 1/10. That's 3/10 cents higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 25,958, down 44 points. The S&P 5 points lower at 2884.75. And the U.S. dollar at 94.78 is down 0.445. The gold futures on the afternoon, $1,208.20, up $11.40. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. We'll see a mostly cloudy skies with a low of 57 degrees on an east wind at 3 to 5. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny for Thursday, a high of 80, light east winds. Thursday evening, clear, a low of 60, light east winds, maybe turning to the northeast. And sunny skies on Friday with a high of 85. Those east-northeast winds at 3 to 5 miles an hour will stick around. That'll bring us clear skies Friday evening, a drop to a low of 61. The east-northeast winds at 3 to 5 there as well. And then on Saturday, sunny skies, a high of 85 degrees. Again, those 5 to 7 mile an hour east-northeast winds. Saturday evening, clear at a low of 65. Sunny on Sunday and 87. Mostly clear on Sunday evening. And we'll drop to a low of 65. Monday, sunny skies and 87. Monday night, mostly clear in 65. And on Tuesday, sunny skies and a high near 84 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner. He is at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes at Stewart Peterson. Jackie, I want to go through the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as they were released first this morning at 11 o'clock. In the crop production numbers, the USDA now says that the corn yield will be 181.3 bushels to the acre. That's up from the 178.4 that was predicted in the month of August, and it's higher than the trade estimate at 177.8. That'll give us an ending total stocks at 14,827,000,000. That's per production, and a carryout of 1.774 billion bushels. For the soybeans, yield went up there as well at 52.8 bushels to the acre. Last month it was 51.6, and the trade was thinking 52.2. And our ending stocks for soybeans now stand at 845 million bushels.
Yeah.
Tell me what you thought of those numbers when you first saw them.
I think everybody'd be a liar if they said they weren't, you know, shocked at the corn number at 181.3. Then when you dig a little deeper, you start to see that possibly it's justified. You know, when you look at the ending stocks numbers on beans, you know, they even reduced the carry-in by 35 million. But I still was impressed because, you know, they raised production by 107 million, up crush by 10 million. So we only ended up increasing the carryout by 60 million bushels. Now, 845 is a number I've never seen in all these years, to be absolutely honest with you. And, you know, on the corn side of things, we increased production by 240 million. And carryout only went up by 90 million, and that was basically because of an increase in feed and they again increased exports. And so I think everybody was shocked when you look at the bigger picture. Corn, of course, being down, you know, all the way to 350 and three quarters, that's getting into the golden neighborhood of support, you know, and so not surprised by that. I think when you look at the bean situation, you know, beans went down on the at the beginning, and then managed to come back up. And I think some of that is spread unwinding between corn and beans. They had been buying corn and selling beans. And at the same time, I also think that some of it is in relationship to the hurricane that's coming in, you know, in the east. I did look at production, you know, and if we wiped out every bean that's expected to be produced in North Carolina and South Carolina, we would still only drop the carryout by 88 million bushels, and we'd still be at 757 million. So, you know, I definitely would be lower, but it's certainly not as significant as if we had something like that going on in Illinois or Iowa or whatever. But you know, it's a tough one to digest. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who said that's just plain crazy. And at the same time, you know, we always have a deviation, and I talk about that. On corn, it was 5.3%, and what that means is we came in at 181.3. It could be as high as 190.9 or as low as 171.7. And beans, we came in at 52.8. They've got a 9.2% deviation. We could be as high as 57.7, as low as 48.5. Now, on this report, they did go to their plots. They did talk to 9,800 producers. And guys who have 10,000 acres or more are talked to every single time. So, you know, it isn't like they just made these numbers up out of their plots. Let's just put it that way. But I did go back and look at 2017. And they had the same deviations, 5.3% and 9.2%. And they had 169.9 for corn on September. We ended up with 176.6. And on beans, they were at 49.9. We ended up at 49.1. So, you know, obvious that beans are more impacted at this time of year, of course, than what corn is going to be. So, you know, it's going to be interesting as we go forward. And as I dug even deeper, Todd, the ear weight number is amazing. I mean, this is the highest ear weight at 0.36 with a population of 29,300 plants per acre. On corn, that's the highest ever that I've ever seen. And on beans, we had pod weights of over a third of a pound, also the highest ever, and 1,775 pods per 18 square feet. That is not a record, but it is just you know, the amount of crop that's out there is amazing. Let's just put it that way. Now, whether it's going to be heavily impacted by the rains that we've seen everywhere and by the hurricane, that remains to be seen.
What do you think about the negotiations with China at this point? What kind of questions do we have? Can they or will they come in to pick up some of this big crop? Does it push it low enough that we start to export more to them? The trade deal is still, of course, up in the air.
Well, I think the trade deal is definitely still up in the air. And I do think that we will see them come back in. In fact, we have seen them come back. And they sold some beans out of state reserves this week from 2013, and it averaged $12.20 a bushel. Now, that's up almost... Well, 1098 was the last sale. And so, you know, it tells me that there is definitely a need, because before, you know, they were trying to sell beans and they could never sell them out of reserves. I think the bigger thing at this point in time is we've got record low ending stocks down in Brazil. And that's primarily to China taking stocks from them. But it's likely, I think, that they're going to run out of beans down there. And so, you know, with a short new crop down there, China would be forced to buy from us. I think that the reality is, Todd, when you look at the big picture on export sales, as soon as the tariffs came in, we saw countries that never bought big amounts from us start to buy big amounts from us. So I do think that China continues to buy from us, just in a different way, you know, and they may be forced to actually have to come in. You know, we saw unknown cancel yesterday, a bunch of beans, 180,000 metric tons. And I think that, you know, negotiations are always kind of a game. And there's nobody better at it than China is, or obviously than Trump is in that respect. And so I think that in general, some of the terror is wearing off a bit, especially on the bean side, because we have seen them take some shipments from us. They just got a shipment that actually came into the port yesterday. And so I think in general, we're going to be walking the fine line. The big thing that happens is this. If the trade agreement is settled, a lot of guys expect to see beans go up a dollar a bushel. And I don't know if I believe that, because primarily because of where the U.S. dollar is. And the U.S. dollar is you know, being hanging out in that 95 area. We're at 94.7 today. Makes it really tough for us to sell. So that could just be the switch. But well, again, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it.
On the outside issues, other issues related to trade, weekly support and resistance numbers, you've been giving those. Let's not miss those this week.
Well, I tell you what, support for September 337, we went down to 340.5 today, major support at 305, and then major support at 273. Let's hope we never see that. Resistance 370, 380, and then that gap that's at 398 and three quarters up to $4. On December, first support 350. We went to 350 and three quarters, then 320 and then 290. And resistance 380, 390, and the gap between 410 and 410.5 would be major resistance. On beans, September 810 for the first support, 750 and then 715. And resistance at 910, 940, and 1006. And then on November beans, 820. You know, we went down to 821 and a quarter today. So it's right there, and it bounced back off of it. Second support's at 770 and then down at 730. Resistance at 912, 944, and 975.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking so much time with us for the day.
You're welcome, and thank you. Have a good one.
Jackie Vex, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. We're here on the site of the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota. Jerry Gulke is here. And, Jerry, I need some clarification from you about a tweet that I put out yesterday, and I'm not quite sure I understood. Of course, here in Fargo, we're hearing a lot about not being able to get a fall bid, actually, for soybeans. But you've had... A similar problem in northern Illinois, though I'm getting a lot of pushback from Twitter on just exactly what your problem is here. So why don't you tell me there what's happening?
Well, we'll always get a bid and a basis, but it's very difficult to get an elevator narrowed down to a reasonable bid for, say, July futures. And then also today I've asked, I've not got word back, what's the bid for next September and next November beans? Because the carry is there to July, 47 cents or 50 cents from now. And the theory in our past has always been, and of course the past is over, we're on new charted waters, past has always been you could hedge off a good carry, which we've never had in beans before, and then the basis would naturally rise after after harvest. The problem we have is that the basis in North Dakota, as you know, we farm up here as well, it's almost it's minus $1.80 this morning, probably headed for $2 down or more. And a lot of elevators in North Dakota now are no bidding the beans because they don't have a place to go for them. They don't know really what kind of basis, what's a good basis for them and a really bad one for us. So the opportunity to ship beans from North Dakota down to Rockford, Illinois is pretty good in that area. They won't stop there. But if you can buy beans for two and a quarter basis up in North Dakota, you can ship them down here and squeeze my basis. So that's the difficult thing that the elevators are having in Northern Illinois, at least. So my fear is that I hedge beans off in July, and a basis is now maybe they'll quote me 80 under, I don't know. Come July, what if they're $1.10 or $1.25 under, and Brazil gets a good crop and we're still arguing with China. So the whole mode of operation that I've heard here at the Big Iron from analysts has been, you got to store the beans because of the carry. You got to store the corn because of the carry. Well, that may not work in beans, and it concerns me because I've got beans to store as well, not only in Illinois, but a lot of them in North Dakota, you know. And that's a real dilemma that is a real problem with bankers. So we're getting calls from bankers from every state, just seems like, what's this going to turn into? So hopefully the panic gets to the White House and to Purdue that says we need to do something to shore up these prices. A $9 loan on beans, a $3 loan on corn would go a long way to solve the future side of it. But then how do we find the buyers to make up for China? And that may take a while.
Yeah. So in short, your problem is you want to take advantage of the basis narrowing up.
Yeah.
However, the elevator's saying, hey, wait a second, if we've got the Dakotas risk pinned in, and they're not going to ship to the PNW, and
right,
we don't know whether that's coming our way,
yep,
whether we can ship it in cheaper, and how
yep
wide we need to go to the basis. Yep. So they're just not willing to make a bid
yep
for you in July for you to do deliveries at that
yep
point.
That's right. And it's more risky than it has been because usually we never saw a basis in Northern Illinois much below 35 cents for a basis in beans. And now we're 80 or 70 or 90. That's quite a risk. It's 40 cents a bushel. It makes the money that we've gotten from the tariff thing, the half that we're going to get, kind of minuscule compared to what we could lose on the basis side. And that's been a big complaint in North Dakota, that they lost more in basis just about than what they're going to get from the tariff adjustment that's coming our way, supposedly.
Yeah. So the folks in the Western Corn Belt here in the Dakotas really don't have an opportunity to deliver beans even at
no
harvest.
Yeah.
So they've got to find a place to store them, whether that's on ground or in the bins or someplace.
Yeah.
That's not the case in the Midwest. If you can deliver across the scale, should you go ahead and do that?
Boy, I tell you, it was tempting to me. I thought about it yesterday. I think we'll wait a little bit. Certainly today's report has put a line in the sand maybe in beans a little bit. In other words, we've gotten rumors that China may come back at the low level again. So maybe we're squeezing them enough in other areas they want to talk. And if we had any common sense in our negotiations, in my mind, we do agriculture, get that set aside and set that aside, and then worry about the intellectual rights thing that could take months, if not years, to resolve, and get the agriculture thing out of the way. Otherwise, I think we're setting ourselves up for a 1980s type debacle that we haven't been, you know, a lot of people don't know how to act. Even the big commercials don't know how to act here. We've not seen this before.
Of course, if you're in the president's position or in the trade advisor's position, this is what we trade with China. It's unlikely that they'll try
yeah
to settle that early on. That's the stick they have.
Yep, that's right. And the longer we wait, the more opportunity they have of getting it somewhere else. And just today, they either announced or it was pretty common that they thought they'd lower their demand for needs for beans from all sources, another 10 million metric ton. That means that we hold some of the carryover, and so does Brazil. And who wins this whole thing? China's got a surplus on both sides, and now the price is pretty much controlled again by not just us holding a billion bushels, but maybe South America holding 400 or 500 million.
It's a lot of beans. On the corn side of the marketplace, I was looking at the executive, and I'm sure that we've talked about this with Jackie Bakes, because you and I are
right
talking before
right
we talk with her, at the executive summary, showing the changes state by state, also giving the two things that really made a difference this time around for the national yield. And now both the ear implied ear weight, the heaviest we've ever had, and the number of ears per acre, the heaviest we have. So that's all the way up to the right-hand side, and made a huge difference in how big this crop is. I'm surprised it came back up.
Yeah, me too. I all we heard was that we matured this crop too fast and that we lost some maturing time. And maybe that doesn't work with these new hybrids anymore. I guess I got to bow down to the hybrids of Iridium as good as they say they are. I knew that the yield, the numbers of cobs were there. We've got an ear on every cob, which we didn't have last year. You can walk into the cornfields in northern Illinois, at least, and in other parts, and just say, wow, this is a big crop. It's hard, you know, when you're talking 200 bushel of corn, it's hard to judge a field of 10% by looking at it. You know, even by measuring it yourself, we get errors. So I guess we deal with the hand that's been dealt us. The good news is it's still not over 2 billion, and we probably still have at some level a rally potential. So I like the idea of selling calls far out. I sold some $4 July calls, and you don't get a lot for it, but somebody's going to have to. I'm going to store some grain commercially, and so that's how I'm going to pay for my storage, is sell a call. If it gets that high, I'll take $4 a bushel for my grain again, and on a yield now that's bigger. The one last thing I think we got to look at, and this is the acres that's going to be planted next year. Everybody thinks we're going to cut bean acres. I think we have to. I think the market would give us incentive not to plant them. But when I start talking to our clients all over the country, I'm getting a little nervous because they come up with the idea, you know, that price times bushels equals gross. So I'm looking at 8 to 10 bushels an acre more in beans times a lower price. You do the math yourself and you say, you know, this is not bad, and Trump gives me 80 cents on the whole thing or a buck and a half on the other. Assuming you sold half your crop, you know, at $10 or $9.90 or something, or 40%, getting that extra money and what you lost with another dollar or two on the downside, plus the yield, this is not a bad year for beans. And we're getting an idea that says, you know, maybe we'll just keep my 50-50 rotation, and we may not see this 8 or 9 million acre drop in beans that we need, or the 4 to 5 million acre or 6 million acre increase in corn that we need also. So all these other things in there about the world crop going down in size and all that, everybody knew that, and I kept saying it to myself or other people, why is the market giving me such a long time to buy $4.20 corn? And it just doesn't work that easy, or we'd all be millionaires. We'd have bought the low and sold the high. So now we find out today what happened. This yield is a lot bigger than what we thought. And whether you believe NASA or not, that's what we're going to trade. And it's fortunate that theoretically we got 4 or 5 more bushels times $3 net, we'll say. And that's another $15 an acre that we got to offset the poor prices. And I think I'll store some corn. I'm not so sure as I'm going to store the beans.
Hey, thanks so much, Jerry. We appreciate you being with us.
Yep, thank you.
Jerry Gaulke, of course, is with the Gaulke Group. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota.
It's National Chocolate Milkshake Day. The first milkshakes were alcoholic whiskey drinks. It was not until the turn of the 20th century that the term referred to wholesome drinks made with vanilla, strawberry, or chocolate syrups. By the way, the use of malted milk powder in milkshakes was made famous by Chicago drugstore chain employee Pop Colson. The malted milk became the chain's most popular soda fountain drink. On this day in agricultural history in 1818, Richard Jordan Gatling was born. Before inventing the Gatling gun, he developed a machine for sowing rice, wheat, and other grains, and he also invented a steam plow. In 1910, Alexander Langmuir was born. He is credited with creation of the U.S. Epidemic Intelligence Service. His work contributed to the virtual elimination of polio in the U.S. and a better understanding of other infectious diseases. And in 1958, Jack Kirby demonstrated his invention of a miniaturized electric circuit to his Texas Instruments supervisors. Early the following year, Kirby would apply for a patent for what would become the world's first integrated circuit. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the Big Iron Farm Show site. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks so much for being with us. Can you tell me just a little bit about what's been happening in South America? They normally, at this time of year, wait for a rainfall to get started, and I think they might be finding a little one.
Well, we do have a little rainfall coming up here. As we go from Friday through Sunday, the odds are pretty high that we're going to see rain occur in most of southern Brazil, really from the center west crop areas into portions of southern Minas Gerais and southward through Rio Grande do Sul. This includes probably the south half of their production region. Most of this, again, will be Friday into Sunday with a few showers lingering on Monday. Now, the most significant rain will be in portions of Minas Gerais and Mato Grosso do Sul, Sao Paulo, and Paraná, and they are going to continue planting a little early corn in that area. Now, for soybeans, I think the rule is for Mato Grosso, they can't plant before the 15th of September. But that's this weekend, and with the shower activity coming up, there may actually be a little bit of field work taking place next week. Now, the rains that occur in Mato Grosso and Goiás up in the center west part of Brazil is not going to be great enough to support crops for very long, and I do think it'll dry back down again a little later this month. But for that early corn in the southern part of the country, I think we'll see some fairly significant field progress made after the rains pass.
From South America, turn your attention to Canada, where did it snow?
That's exactly right. Alberta, right now, dealing with a snowstorm. And it's mostly in western and northern parts of Alberta, but why I even find that of interest right now is because there is a large amount of canola and maybe a few other crops that still has not been harvested in that area. It's been rather rainy in recent weeks. Now they're going to get some heavy snow accumulating across the area, and that's going to flatten out some of that crop, making it even more difficult to retrieve. So this will be the third year in a row that parts of Alberta have not been able to finish their harvest before snowfall. So it's getting to be a little bit of a problem up that way. But the rest of the prairies are not nearly as vulnerable to that event. We still have drought going on in the southern parts of Canada's prairies and into the northwest U.S. plains, and that is going to continue for a little while longer. With that said, there will be some rain that falls across some of that region here in the coming week.
And finally, what do we know about Florence and its path and the impact, if any, on the Midwest?
Well, the Midwest, I don't think, is going to see a large impact from Florence. But, of course, Florence is still playing around with some of these forecasts. So we're really not quite sure exactly where it's going to go after it gets inland. But it looks as though Ohio and parts of Pennsylvania will probably see some rain from this event as it works its way to the northeast late in the weekend and next week. But the biggest impact will certainly be in the Carolinas. Obviously, a lot of crop damage expected to occur there from excessive rain and some pretty high winds. But for Illinois and Indiana and parts of Michigan, those areas are probably going to see a good 7 to 8, 9 days worth of dry weather because we have to wait for Florence to get out of the way before the weather can start moving from west to east once again. So once Florence is gone, we'll start running into some more rain in the Midwest again.
Hey, thanks, Drew.
You bet. Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota.
Support for WILL comes from the friends of WILL and from Busey, giving more than $1 million and countless volunteer hours annually to make a positive difference in our communities. Busey, your dream, our promise.